Welcome to the Make Better Photos and Videos podcast. I be Ross.
I don't know who I am today. I'll be Gordon today.
Okay. I see you're wearing your Gordon suit today, so that would fit.
Yeah, that would fit most of the time.
So, Gordon, this is going to be fun.
Yes, it is.
What, in your experience, is the biggest challenge for photographers when it comes to learning about using the light meter that is built into their camera most successfully?
Yes. Well, if I was being a smart aleck, which you know I never am.
No, it hasn't happened ever. At least since we started recording.
I would say using it, but I won't say that. I think there are two avenues. There are many who just accept what the meter says and goes with it. And most of the time, they're happy with what they get. But also have times when the images don't come out just as they expected. Certainly from the exposure perspective. Those who want to be more engaged in their photography often struggle to understand why the camera suggests a particular exposure setting, which in turn does not work out.
Well, then, your experience is very consistent with my own. I believe, again, due to that experience, that many camera users, and I hesitate to say sometimes photographers, don't know how the meter makes decisions, and even what the myriad metering modes in the camera do. We know, because we've heard it from folks, that the manuals often go unread. And in many occasions, even when they are read, it's my opinion that most of the metering mode explanations inhale rapidly.
Okay, I'm not sure what you mean by inhale rapidly, but we'll go with that. The key thing to note, though, about all reflected light meters, which is what all of us current, with all the current cameras out there, is what they are programmed to achieve. This is what we call the middle gray. And for easy understanding, that is the point halfway between pure black and pure white.
I agree. But do you think that many photographers can recognize middle gray when they see it?
Oh, I don't think so. I know that because I know what it should be, and I look for approximations, and I'd guess that 50% of the time I'd be wrong. The use of the gray card, however, changes this. But this is something that is no longer taught and often discounted by many as being a method of understanding what metering does.
Okay, let's simplify that. We understand that many cameras have different metering modes, and as a consequence, they read the overall scene differently. But as an outcome, they're going to come up with an exposure recommendation that is going to render whatever the overall luminosity for the measurement area was to return an exposure set of settings for middle gray. This can be hard to comprehend because humans see in color. And even those who choose to switch their viewfinder or their LCD to a monochrome display, that doesn't help much because that monochrome view is very limited. It has far fewer stops than the sensor can actually see, and in many cases, actually creates a false sense of security.
Mm-hmm. So you recommend a gray card?
The truth is, I only recommend a gray card to those who are committed to their photography and are willing to use it more as a training tool than specifically inserting it into every image that they make and then having to figure out how to take it out later.
Okay. And how do you mean that? Do you have some exercises to improve our understanding of this?
Well, as we know, practice is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
So the first exercise is a very simple one. Find a basic scene where the light falling it is pretty even. So think an overcast type day.
Like today and yesterday and day before?
Well, not so much the couple of days before, because that was a torrential downpour.
Well, yes.
But, yeah.
But like, even?
Like today is a good example. It's overcast, the light's very flat, it's very even. It's a very good day to make photographs. So, what we're going to do is we're going to make an image with the exposure that the camera recommends. Then, we're going to put a gray card into that scene and shoot it again. Unless you're using spot metering, and you shouldn't be, the second image is going to look pretty darn close to what you saw in the scene about 95% of the time, meaning that the gray card is going to look middle, and so the scene will also average to that middle gray. Mm-hmm. This is an important exercise because it teaches us to recognize, slowly and with practice, what middle gray actually looks like.
Okay. So once you've done that, now what?
Well, now you're going to open the images that you've made, and you're going to adjust the exposure slide until the one with the gray card in the images matches the tonality of the gray card that you're holding beside you. Obviously, you need to be working under similar lighting. And then you can use the white balance eyedropper in your editor to neutralize any color shifts due to light coloring in your image. So, for example, if we were working today, if we shot at 6 in the morning, the color of the light would be different than it is today, or right now anyway. So we want to neutralize that color cast because it tricks our eyes, because we are biased to seeing color. But the idea is, you've got the gray card as a reference for middle gray in the second image. Now make any adjustments to the first image so the gray card looks like the gray card you hold in your hand.
Okay, that makes sense. So if an exposure adjustment was needed to match the gray cards, then it means that the meter suggestion was skewed one way or the other by the elements of the scene to not quite be middle gray.
Exactly correct. And let's use today as an example. There's still snow on the ground in freaking April. We know that if we were to take a general light meter reading in a scene where there's snow, that the meter is going to be wrong, because the majority of the scene is white, not gray. The idea is, the more that you do this as a photographer, and it does require lots of repetition, the better you become as a photographer to learn to see what part of your subject, whatever your subject, is going to be middle gray. I like to take a gray card into the field with me and see if I can pick which scene element is middle gray, and then check my guess against the physical gray card. It's a training exercise. You're training yourself to see what element of your composition is going to be middle gray.
So with practice then, and this is a reiteration, you can then learn to recognize what will be middle gray. But how do you figure this is going to be helpful?
Well, where this becomes very helpful is when you start to consider how you are going to render images from a total dynamic range perspective. Then you can take whatever your sensor dynamic range number is, and you can find that out through a variety of sources. The easiest way is type into your search engine, what's the dynamic range of the sensor in my whatever camera. Whatever that number comes back to, divide it in half and then subtract one half from the number that you get. And that's going to give you a really good sense for you and your specific sensor how many stops away black and white are in the sensor from middle gray. The sensor is going to see more than what you see on an LCD screen. This sometimes confuses people, but it's really important. So if we use an example of a sensor that is said to have 12 stops of dynamic range, I divide it in two, six,
right,
subtract a half,
right,
and what it would say is that pure black is about 5.5 stops away from middle gray, and pure white is about 5.5 stops away from middle gray. These are approximations because some meters bias a little hot, some bias a little cold, more dark, more light, but it gives you a really good sense of where to start.
Yeah, and reality, this photography is all approximations.
Very much so.
I mean, okay, but so now what?
Well, let's go to some example, and we'll use Cats.
As the musical?
Example. No.
Oh, the actual Cats.
The ones that don't suck. Let's say, for example, that you have a black cat in your scene. You now know how many stops away from generic middle gray that black fur needs to be. In our example, to get it black, that's going to be 5.5 stops below what the general meter reading is going to be for a generic scene. Now, if the cat fills the frame, meaning the only thing in the frame is the black cat, you now also know how many stops that you need to underexpose to ensure that said black cat remains black. And the same rules would apply if we make a change. Now we get a white cat. But now, instead of underexposing for a full-frame white cat, you're going to need to overexpose to make sure that cat comes out white. You can take this to a different example. Let's say a night shot, where you want the elements of the scene that should be black to actually be black. Or, like today, where you're photographing a snow scene, where you actually want the snow to be white and not gray.
I know this, but by using arbitrary numbers, not ones calculated from factoring the dynamic range of my sensor. And I hadn't thought of it that way, and I think that's important. Do you have another way to find your camera's range between black and white?
I do, but it will be less accurate. I use a tricard. This is basically a set of three cards. One is middle gray, one is black, and one is white. In this case, I fill the frame with each card and spot meter off them, and I'm going to start with a gray card and get an exposure setting. Once I've got that, I actually make an image of the gray card. Now I switch it out for the black card, and I get a new exposure setting. But what's going to happen if I photograph that black card using that new spot meter reading? How is it going to render? It's going to render as gray.
Mm-hmm.
So I use this as an example, using whatever my gray exposure level was, to underexpose by that amount to get to a setting that will give me pure black.
Right.
And then I do exactly the same thing for the white card.
Right.
So now I can learn and make exposures. They go into a little test file that says, okay, for white on this camera with this sensor, I need to overexpose X. And for this camera for black on this sensor, I need to underexpose Y from whatever the gray kind of scale metering is.
Isn't it good, the exposure readings that you get of the black and the white, because aren't they all going to be wrong in the first place?
Absolutely. Why?
Well, yeah, okay, sure. Because the meters are always going to show you middle gray, regardless of whether they're white or black, and it doesn't know the difference. It just knows that it needs to be middle gray.
Exactly.
So yes,
correct.
That actually makes perfect sense.
So, for example, when you came by today, you brought your camera. If you went outside and made a photograph today where there's a lot of snow and you filled the frame with snow and you just took the meter reading?
Bleh.
What's going to happen to the snow?
Gray.
It's going to be gray. And what you just said, that meters always recommend an exposure that will render to middle gray on average, that's rule number one of reflected light meters. So now you've got a challenge. How will you prove that?
So make an image of of your set using these particular settings that you get for each card. The setting of the gray card will look pretty close to right on. But the meter reading of the black card will make it not black but middle gray. Furthermore, the meter reading of the white card will make it middle gray. The meter reading of the black card will not produce any blacks, and a meter reading of the white will not produce any whites.
And that is an excellent way to prove that this is how light meters work, specifically reflected light meters. That's exercise number two. Now go on Amazon or wherever it is you buy your stuff and buy a tricard and put it in your camera bag, but also take it out and use it. Learning to see middle gray is a journey. And by having both the white and the black card for reference, it's going to make your learning path quicker.
But I can hear listeners say, I shoot in color and this gray card stuff, well, it's all about black and white. Does this gray card offer any other benefits related solely to color?
As a matter of fact, it's integral to successful color photography. A middle gray card renders in what we know from a color perspective, RGB, as 127, 127, 127. Turn that
That's the red, green, and blue.
That's red, green, and blue. And if you have a red value of 127, a green value of 127, and a blue value of 127, you have middle gray. Now, if you have one of these gray cards in a reference shot for the light that's present, you can also use that gray card with your white balance eyedropper in your editor and neutralize any color casts. Now, let's suppose that you are taking 25 images of a particular scene. You only have to correct the white balance on the first image. Then you're going to copy that white balance settings and paste it onto all the other images. It is the fastest way to neutralize color cast. Now, that is a different workflow process, and it's a benefit that arises from the single tool being the gray card. However, I have to say that the assertion that a gray card is irrelevant when one shoots in color is 100% wrong. Why people believe this, I don't know. But belief and knowledge are not the same thing. In reality, without luminosity, upon which the entire grayscale is based, there would be no color at all. I'm going to go with folks being misinformed.
So, the photographer who undertakes this practice will develop skills in recognizing the dynamic range of an image before he actually makes it, and also learn which part of it is actually going to fall in the middle gray, and can then make exposure decisions, including any compensations that he needs to make before making the image. That sounds like a must-build skill. And though I know the principle, there are aspects of it which I think would widen my understanding and expose and improve my exposure management.
As we both know, photography is a journey, not a destination. And each step that we take is an opportunity to widen our understanding. Thanks very much to all of our listeners. To help support the channel, please click the Support Us on Patreon button on the website, or if you're a subscriber, in the email that you receive with this episode link. Huge thanks to all the folks who have already become Patreon supporters. If you shop at B&H Photo Video, please use the link on the main page of thephotovideoguy.ca, as it pays a small commission here and costs you nothing to do. Always feel free to submit a comment or send in a question as I read and respond to all. On behalf of the channel, we wish you peace and good health. I've been Ross.
And I still am Gordon.
And we will speak to you again soon.